Prabhupada had mentioned that the microphone is such a wonderful invention that you have to put it inside your mouth to make it work. So basically, what we would like to discuss, you know, with the blessings of the assembled devotees and the Maharaj, is that in approaching or understanding the sadhana or the culture of Krishna consciousness, that there are some basic philosophical points on which it's all based. And by understanding those, then the rest of it becomes quite easy. If one understands the principles, then the details underlining those principles become very, very clear and very practical. Because otherwise, we get caught up in details and we think the detail is the important element. Details, of course, are important, but it's what is the purpose of applying the detail that is more important. This way one knows how to apply a principle in so many different situations. Because otherwise, we will find in one situation we are performing an activity, but then we do the same, it worked very nicely, we do it in another situation, it doesn't work. That is because the principle behind it is not understood. If we understand the principle, then the details are very easily applied. So, the subject can be approached from many, many different angles, so we will try one of them now. Basically, we have to see what is culture. So culture we're basically defining as that you have a philosophy by which one gauges or measures one's activities, and then performing one's activities in line with that understanding. That is your culture. So culture isn't just going to the opera or, you know, drinking your tea with your little fingers sticking out. But culture actually is a lifestyle. It's a way of thinking. It's a way of living. So if we look at this, this means that everything that we do has something behind it. So if you have a rule, then there's something behind that rule that it's trying to establish. So the rule itself is not an end. The rule is actually just something to ensure that the purpose or the mentality is actually being attained. That is the purpose of the rule. Now, one may look at, well, why do we have to have rules in the first place? So this goes, we have to go back a little bit to the spiritual realm, where there, everyone in the spiritual realm performs their activities because of their love for Krishna. They have pure love, and based on that pure love, they will manifest a particular form, and they will follow a particular way of dealing, or a particular culture that fits their rasa. And if they act outside of that culture, it becomes rasa-vas. It doesn't match the relationship they have with Krishna. Like the gopis don't walk up to Krishna and slap him on the back. You know, the cowherd boys do that. You know, Mother Yashoda won't do that either. She will come and embrace Krishna and sit him down and feed him. So because of the rasa that they have, that establishes a particular way they behave and what they do. And this is based on their pure love. So here you have... Yeah. It is a very natural environment where everything is spiritual. Spiritual living entities and interacting with Krishna in a spiritual way. Now, when we come to the material world, then we have a slightly different situation. We're dealing with material elements, and we're not dealing in a spiritual environment. And the principle of being here in the material world is we've forgotten Krishna. So the whole idea, the purpose of the material world, or at least Krishna's purpose, is how to reform the living entities and bring them back to his service. Though, of course, the living entities have the independence to stay for as long as they like. But the actual purpose of the material world is that they come out. So if they're going to come out, that means that if you want to organize or function within the material world properly, you must actually be following a lifestyle or a culture that is close enough to the spiritual culture that you can actually, it can interface and you can get out when you decide. So Krishna's idea is, even if you're not Krishna conscious, you should still follow Krishna's culture. Though you may do it for material motives, for karma, for jnana, for yoga. But still, the principles of Krishna's culture, the spiritual culture, is to be put into place. But there's a slight difficulty in doing this, in that that culture happens naturally in the spiritual realm because of the pure love and because of the pure association. But here, that won't happen. We don't have pure love, so it doesn't spontaneously manifest the culture. And we don't have that pure association. We're just basically associating with matter. So, therefore, Krishna then takes this culture and establishes it through the Vedic literatures as a code of conduct, a set of rules. And these rules is called religiosity, or religion, varnashram. These are the codes of conduct on how one should behave. And they are the codes of someone who, in pure devotion, how they would do things. But since we don't have that, we don't know what to do, so therefore it's made as rules so that we will follow them. Now, along with these essential principles and rules that are for those who want to follow the spiritual culture in the material world as practice, means you know a rule, you follow it, you practice it. If you understand the purpose, you also develop the proper mentality, the spiritual mentality, then you're fit to associate those who follow the pure spiritual culture. So, but there are those who want to be here and not follow that spiritual path. So they are also, they follow the same culture, but for them, because they are not trying to go upwards in this path, they just want to stay, loiter on the path. Krishna says there's only one path. You have him at one end and hell at the other. And so the pious people like to kind of stay in the middle. Right? They don't want to use the culture for Krishna. So there's so many responsibilities they must take because Krishna's not involved. Krishna's not the doer in the equation. So therefore, you do something, you must take the reaction. So all these things are written in. So for those who are the karmis, the jnanis, yogis, there will be some extra rules for them. And this way, then, because it's meant for everybody who is in the material world, the Vedic rules and regulations or culture becomes very, very broad. But what is broadened is not the principles, but so many details. Because all details in the Vedic culture you can bring back to basic Krishna conscious principles. But they manifest in a way that the materialist doesn't actually know that they're spiritual. And like respect for authority. The whole idea is that we respect Krishna, the supreme authority. So that's written everywhere into the whole Vedic culture. But the materialist, he's not interested in God, he's interested in himself. So he wants to learn something, so the process is you must be respectful, otherwise I'm not respectful, who wants to teach me? So it's for my gain I'm respectful. Then when I become qualified, I'm the teacher, I want that respect. Right? That's my whole goal. You know, either gross or subtle sense gratification. So I'm very happy with this principle of respect. But that's not actually what it's for. It's for actually contacting the pure devotees, respecting them, and making advancement, and coming to the platform, accepting the spirit, the leading devotees in the spiritual realm. Like Krishna Prabhupada says, and when one comes to the platform of advanced devotional service, then one follows in the footsteps of a particular devotee of Vrindavan. So that means this principle of accepting of someone higher than us is eternally going to be there, even in the spiritual realm. Means someone has the mood of a Vatsalya Rasa, they will eternally be serving under Mother Jashoda, Nanda Maharaj, Vrishabhanu Maharaj. That's going on. You never will become equal. You always have that. So this principle must be established. So it's worked in so nicely. So now, what we're looking at, what we actually want to focus on, is within that great body of rules and regulations that are given by the Vedic literatures, then there are those that are recommended by the Acharyas. Especially, we ourselves are Rupanugas. So Rupa Goswami has chosen from that what is important, and as far as the principles and what are their purposes and their basic applications. And Sanatana Goswami has taken those, also giving the purposes, but giving the technical ritual to it. Like Rupa Goswami says, you must chant Hare Krishna. You know, there must be a regulated amount. But he doesn't get into, you have a bead bag, and that has four, it's shaped like a lotus petal with four leaves. You have beads that are 108. They go from, like a snake, from big down to small. There's the main Krishna bead or the Meru bead. You don't cross that. That's given by Sanatana Goswami. So that becomes the ritual. But the purposes of chanting, the process, the mood of chanting, that is all given by Rupa Goswami. And Sanatana Goswami connects the ritual to that. And then you have a very complete picture. So they have gone through all the various scriptures, Nana Shastra Vichara Naika Nipano, and they have chosen what we are to follow. So when we mean Vedic culture, we mean the culture that Krishna gives us through the Vedic literatures that has been approved for us by our Acharyas. So it's Vedic. Vedic means that we follow the laws of God. Krishna has given laws, we follow those laws. Those laws are the Vedic culture. This is the basic principle. So when Prabhupada uses the term Vedic culture, the Vedic culture is eternal. So it's not, it works 5,000 years ago, or okay, it worked when Lord Chaitanya was here. It always works, it eternally works. But for what we want to get out of here, the Acharyas drop off all the extraneous rules that are meant for the Karmis, the Jnanis, and the Yogis, and keep those that are meant for the devotees. In other words, the devotees' rules are the primary and the foundation, and then extra ones are added on. Those are dropped. So it's a very clear process of what they are doing. It's not that they've just picked something here and there, random. So when Prabhupada says Vedic culture, he means this culture he's giving us in his books. And the examples are given in the books, are given in the Bhagavatam, given in the Gita, given in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So we can see these books from the philosophical point, which is their primary purpose, but we can also see them from the cultural point. Because if you have, you accepted this philosophy, then you're going to apply it in your life. So there's a culture of those, it's symptomatic of those who are applying this philosophy. So in the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy, we see that it's very nicely given in the Vedic literatures, and especially the Srimad Bhagavatam. Chaitanya Charitamrita gives even more fine, like coming down to the, you know, very detailed points for us. And if we understand this, then when we see the body of Vedic literature, we can also see the example, what is given to us. And then it becomes very practical for us. Many times it'll be, I've heard, well, it's not practical. Vedic culture is not practical. But the point is, or where's the example? Somebody will say, well, where is all the example of it? But it's given there in the Bhagavatam. We see how people react, how they deal, just like Krishna says in the Gita, Tad vidhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya. So then we will say, yes, this is nice. Okay. And then we will try to do it, may not do it, say, well, where's, you know, how do we do this, all this. But the Gita itself is the example of this. Krishna is speaking. Arjuna has accepted him as his authority. Arjuna wants to know. Right? So, Pranipata has been attained. He has the desire to know. Then, Krishna talks and Arjuna asks questions. Pariprashna. He doesn't ask challenging questions. He's saying stuff like, Krishna, you said this and you said that. I don't understand. Right? So this is very, very important. How, when one hears things that seem contradictory, how you ask that question? He doesn't go, hey, you said this and now you say that. You know, this sounds very contradictory. You know, it's like, I think maybe you're making a mistake here. You got to pick this or that, you know. Don't be confusing. You know, you should be straightforward. You should take Jayadwaita Maharaj's class on, you know, straight thinking and, you know, strong speaking and, you know, Krishna, why don't you get it together? But he says, it's contradictory, so I don't understand. I'm not educated enough. So could you explain how these two seemingly contradictory things are not contradictory, how they're complementary? And the whole book is just questions and answers. Arjuna is constantly questioning, because the purpose of questioning is to remove doubts and misgivings. That's anartha nivritti. Anarthas manifest as doubts and misgivings. When there's a doubt, then we can't do it. When there's no doubt, we do it. Right? When there's doubts, we're confused, we're not quite sure, we get influenced. When there's no doubt, we know what to do, and then we're very fixed. So the whole book is showing us how to go through this. And then, after hearing the instruction, service, one applies it. And Krishna says at the end, you've heard? And Arjuna says, yes. And so what is he going to do? Now he's going to fight. He's going to fight now thinking of Krishna. So we see how a student behaves. And at the same time, we see how a teacher behaves. Krishna is very gentle. He's very kind in his explanation, but he's very firm. He says things how Arjuna can understand them, but he doesn't compromise. And we see at the end, after he's finished explaining everything, he asks him, do you understand? And he is willing to go through the whole process again if that will help his student. If the student's understood, fine. If not, he'll go through the whole thing again, re-explain it. That's a teacher. So that's patience. So it says that the Brahman has, you know, all these different qualities. Right? Patience, tolerance, forgiveness, all these things. Why? Because otherwise, how do you teach? So Krishna is giving the perfect example of how to teach. So like this, just we see here in the Gita, so many practical examples. The Bhagavatam, so many more. The Gita establishes us in the proper consciousness by which we can approach the Bhagavatam. And the Bhagavatam, the reason that it's written in this form, it means the absolute truth is given to us in this form, it's because this is the form that we require. We don't have the intelligence, we don't have the determination to just take straight from Upanishads or straight from the Vedic literature and understand the whole philosophy, understand the whole culture, the mentalities, everything, just by its study, means by its inference, and then apply it in our life. Therefore, the absolute, topmost Vedic philosophy and principles is given to us in the form of stories. And these stories then are interactions between the devotees and the Lord at every level of progress, right? And this is for us. It's not for someone else. Right? One may say, well, okay, Bhagavatam, pure devotees, 5,000 years ago. But why are they pure devotees? This we discussed a little bit last night. Because of their endeavor to please the Lord. We see in the Bhagavatam this exclusive approaching the Lord for whatever it is. Bhagavatam says, whatever it is you want. You want liberation? You want material facilities? You want to go back to Godhead? You approach Krishna, the intelligent person. So we see examples of all this. Kardama went through so much austerity and nice things to approach the Lord for a wife. So he's following this. And because of this, he became perfect. Because he went through Krishna's process, approaching Krishna, to get what he wanted. He didn't use another process. Therefore, it's in the Bhagavatam. Right? Puru Ravas was even more, materially inclined. It was, Kardama is a good brahmachari, first class brahmachari. He is just knows I have attachments, I need to get married. But he follows very strictly the sadhana and everything. In fact, one of Prabhupada's very strong verses on brahmachari behavior is found in the middle of this chapter. He's doing his yajnas and all that to please the Lord to get a wife. And in the purport, Prabhupada is talking about, you know, brahmachari. Because He has the mentality. He sees the Lord. One may ask, well, how is it that one can be a good brahmachari and, you know, approach the Lord for a wife? Because he's approaching the Lord. So anything that's approaching the Lord is transcendental. Right? So the first principle, I do these yajnas, I do this sacrifice, I do my japa, I do my sadhana to please the Lord. Once I please the Lord, then, okay, I may be foolish enough that I ask for, you know, marriage situation instead of going back to Godhead. When the Lord came, he could have said, you know, all I want is you. But we don't see that. He just told him, I want a wife. But because he approached the Lord means he's God conscious. And in this way, then, he attained to perfection. And because he had approached the Lord in such purity, the Lord himself came as his son. Not someone else, the Lord himself. So the point is that service is being done. So now you see here how a brahmachari acts. What? When Prabhupada says the first class brahmachari becomes the first class grihastha. Here's the example. How it is that it works. We'll make up our own idea, but here's the example of actually what's going on. How Bhagavatam is, what is going on here? But we see as Bhagavatam goes, you get higher and higher levels. Then you get the story of Dhruva. He wanted a kingdom. He really wanted that. He's approaching the Lord. So, you know, someone also asked, well, how is it someone has a material desire? How will they serve the Lord? It wasn't that he was thinking the material desire in his meditation. He's thinking of the Lord because he's the one he wants to ask for the desire. So when he's doing his meditation, the desire is not part of it. Right? It's just like, if you see this person, I can fulfill your desire. So you're completely determined, I'm going to see this person. Once I see the person, then I'm going to remember my desire and ask it. But after seeing the Lord, he gave up that desire. Then we see later, we see Prahlad Maharaj. He never had any desire. He's just approaching the Lord with pure devotion. So that is a very special, special platform that he is on. So we see as the Bhagavatam goes, it shows more and more deep surrender and understanding. Till we get to the 10th canto, where we see the greatest surrender and understanding, the residence of Vrindavan. Then it goes to show how it's going from there, coming back down into the material world. Right? It's showing how it comes up, going up through the stages to get to that platform. Then it's showing how these things, it transforms. We see Krishna from there goes to Mathura, goes to Dwarka. Then the 11th canto, we're discussing what's happening in the material world. And then coming back down to the kings, and then finally into the Kali Yuga. So it's these things are being practically shown in the Bhagavatam. So the point here is that we do have the practical example of how to live. We do have the practical example of how to interact. And that is the Vedic literatures as given to us by our acharyas, by Srila Prabhupada and the Goswamis. So what Srila Prabhupada says and the acharyas say, this is Vedic culture. This is what we mean by Vedic culture. Otherwise some will say, well, we're not actually meaning Prabhupada's Vedic culture, we're meaning Prabhupada's culture. The Prabhupada is always using the word Vedic culture because we've chosen those points. Is this clear? Because that kind of establishes then where we'll continue from. Okay. Is there any questions on this or comments? Or those will move to the next place. Okay, so now if we want to look at what we're dealing with, and the culture in the form of rules and regulations, this is very, very important to understand what it is. So in this we have basically the living entity has five levels of consciousness that they can function on. They can function on the sensual platform. They can function, which is called anamai. They can function on the extended sensual platform, which is called manamoy. See, if we're working on our own senses, then, you know, there's not so much, you don't need much structure in society. Basically, you work on the logic of the fish. Whoever's biggest wins. Like that. Like you see the animals. There's something to eat. Whichever's the bigger animal, they get to eat it. like that. Very simple. So you don't need a whole lot of cultural structure like that. But if you want to kind of recognize, okay, I want to eat, you want to eat, then we need some rules. So then you have your platform of justice, your economics. In other words, we cooperate together for economic development. And then if someone doesn't follow this, you have justice. And then you have your basic principles of morality, like that, you know, don't steal, because it's not nice. Someone else has it, you respect his right to have things. He shouldn't steal from me either, like this. So that's called pranamoy, or accepting life, accepting others. Then you have the next platform, higher than that, is manamoy, or it's also known as gyanamoy. Sometimes it's misunderstood that the two different things. Manamoy, gyanamoy are the same, because gyan means you have only an intellectual understanding. Right? And the mind has accepted that. Right? The intelligence can say so many things, but you can't work with it until the mind accepts it. Right? You know this is right. I've thought about it in so many ways, but I can't accept it. So you don't actually have that knowledge until the mind takes it. So therefore it's called manamoy. Or gyanamoy, meaning that the knowledge is there. It means intellectual understanding only. So then that, from that platform, you have three categories that fit into there. That is the religious codes given by God, means directly the Vedic codes, so Varnashram and all those codes that go with that. Then the second will be non-Vedic religions and religious principles that are there, that are coming down in some way through God. Then you have mental speculation, where someone makes up their own philosophies. Then the next level above that is the platform of intelligence, where we understand we're not the body, that we're the soul. And that's vijnanamay. On that platform, then we have the, you know, the basically the understanding I am Brahman and one who will act within that culture. But we don't have understanding of the Supreme Lord. So this is the platform of the impersonalists. Then the top platform is called Anandamay. Anandamoy means the platform of relationship with the Lord. And relationship then gives happiness. This is very important to understand. So we become attached then on these levels. So the whole, basically the whole philosophy of Krishna consciousness in the Vedic literature can be boiled down into this point. It's all attachment and relationship. Everything ultimately goes back to this, as we mentioned. First, there's the devotee's affection for Krishna. That's their attachment. And that creates the rasa, the relationship. So based on your kind of rati, or attachment, you have a relationship with Krishna. So this same principle comes down into the material sphere. It's your attachment. Are you attached to the senses, anamoy, extended sense gratification, pranamoy, religious principles, then manamoy, or the understanding I am Brahman, vijnanamay. That's your attachment. And based on that, you're going to act. And you're going to try to get your taste from that, your rasa from that. So ultimately, yeah, that's the principle. Now within this, these five levels of consciousness, you have three basically pure situations of attachment. You have the spiritual, which is the anandamay. You have the emotional or mental, which is the middle, the manamoy, the third level. And you have the attachment to the senses, anamoy. And those in between, the second and fourth, the pranamoy and the vijnanamoy, these are just junctions between. They have qualities of both that which is above and below them. So they're like a junction between them. So it is explained that the living entity has these three platforms in which they can get rasa, which they can get exchange between themselves and others. So if one understands this science, then one can actually be satisfied, one can get oneself out of this material world, at the same time being as satisfied as possible in relationships in the material world. Like that. And if one doesn't understand the science, it's practically impossible
to get out.
Because we will not attain, Krishna says in the Gita, that you perform your prescribed duties and perform them for Him. And He has given details of prescribed duties down to the smallest little detail, like how you brush your teeth, so you can connect it to Krishna. One may ask, well, how do I connect it to Krishna? One is you can remember Krishna while you're brushing your teeth. And if you can't do that, at least you know, I brush my teeth because Krishna said I should brush my teeth. Right? So either from the side of ritual or from the side of remembrance, one can remember. Right? Or one follows that, or he can teach it to others. Right? But in this way, it's connected to Krishna. So Krishna in the 11th canto tells Uddhava, I've dictated so many rules just so that everything that you do, you can connect to Him. So that is what the rules are for. This is the body of literature. So now, we have to understand that those rules, the whole Vedic culture and all that, that is that platform of Manamoy. And that is the platform of emotion. Proper, material, pure material emotion. Pure emotion isn't experienced on the platform of the senses. It's just the sense with the sense object. And we know that, you know, as they're saying, one man's food is another man's poison. So it's how you perceive it, how your mind perceives it, if it's good or bad. Right? Just like you go outside, it's cold. Somebody goes, ah, fresh, brisk, nice. And they're very inspired to walk around and breathe the fresh air. Someone else walks outside and goes, wow, it's cold, and goes back inside. The same sense with the same sense objects have come in contact. But because how the mind perceives it, there's something different. So we see that the senses are actually part of the platform of the mind. Right? Then, also there's another, we may think, well, this middle level, the pranamoy, or the platform of morality and all this, you know, that is what is giving us, that is the real platform of rasa. But there it's actually just extending the sense gratification. I want facilities, you want facilities, let's share the facilities. And we make rules how it should be shared. You know, there must be legislation, there must be justice to see that it's being legislated. And in this way we try to become happy. But still, what is the yardstick? That's the thing. There has to be a yardstick by which you measure morals. That is the difficulty in the modern society today, where there's so much confusion. They have no yardstick. It changes. What was freedom of speech, you know, hundreds of years ago, is different from today. Before, freedom of speech meant you say whatever you like, but you have to say it in some proper way. You have to behave nicely. You have to be a good, you know, moral Christian person. And with that in mind, say what you need to say. You have a brain, you thought something, you observed, you say it. Nowadays, that's not there. Just that I have a tongue and I can vibrate it, that's called freedom of speech. Therefore, I can say things, offend everybody, completely upset the culture, completely undermine everybody else's platform of existence, morals and culture, and it's freedom of speech. So, this pranamoy, or economics, like you see, business. Business means you buy something cheap, you sell it more expensive. That's business. That's it. There's not something else. You know, I mean, there's many details, of course, but that's the fundamental. If you attain that principle, you make profit. You don't, then you might as well forget it. Right? So now, in that, you can either follow the Vedic principles. Get things people need, sell it at a reasonable price, and then in this way live. Or now, you take things people don't need, and because they don't need it, they don't think about it, so you advertise so they do think about it, and then charge them an exorbitant price because you made it something prestige. So this is business. So it fits into that pranamoy. It fits into that level. But it has nothing to judge against, so it creates difficulty. Right? I do business, but I don't care for the material nature. Then we have our pollution and all things. I do business, I don't care for the culture. Therefore, billboards, I'll show anything, do anything. Right? So like this, people don't need it, I'll force them to buy it. Right? You don't have money to buy a car, buy a house, but I advertise in such a way that you can buy it, and then the rest of your life you're, you know, paying mortgages and this and that. Plus, I make a profit off of it. So, in this way, there's no balance. So actually, the emotional and so there's dissatisfaction because it's not proper way that you can interface with others. Because the Pranamoy's platform is still Anamoy. It's just, we'll work together, you know? We'll pleasantly deal with each other so we don't offend each other. But the problem is there's no exchange, real exchange. It's still selfish. I still have my agenda, you have your agenda, we'll compromise so that both of our agendas, you know, win-win, you know, as Kavi puts it. There'll be a win-win situation. And this is the platform of business management. All the modern management books are dealing with business management. I have my agenda, you have yours, and we'll cooperate. I respect you have yours. You know, so he's trying to establish people properly on the platform of Pranamoy rather than get into Anamoy. But the real exchange comes on the third platform, on the Manamoy platform. That is where actual emotional exchange takes place. And it includes the lower. Right? Emotion means you're going to express your emotion. It will be through something. Right? That has to be seen. Otherwise, I'm experiencing emotion. The other can't feel it. The other is experiencing emotion. You can't feel it. So there has to be a way to exchange that. Like friends, they'll whack each other on the back or wrestle together or sit down and eat off the same plate or just do things together. That's the medium through which they express the emotion they're experiencing. Right? The mother with the child, feeding the child or dressing the child, they're always fussing with the child. And then that is expressed. So the senses and the platform of morals is automatically there within this platform of ethics. Right? In these rules. So the Vedic culture is there to establish proper emotional stability in those persons who want to get to the spiritual platform. So by doing this, it establishes that there are these 12 rasas. Right? There are the 12 rasas, meaning the 5 primary and the 7 secondary. And you follow the rules and regulations so that what you're doing is very similar to the spiritual culture. Right? Then you can understand rasa, and then it makes it very easy to work with the spiritual principles. Like this. But at the same time, as we must understand, it still is perverted, it's still material. So it doesn't have direct connection. Just like Krishna dancing with the gopis has nothing to do with material lust. But the principle of you have a boy with a girl, that remains. And how they will exchange. You know, how they'll sit together and smile and all these different things, that remains. But now it's a different thing. That's another. It means there, the modern thing is everything comes down to the sensual platform. Right? We think boy and girl gets together, we only think of the sensual aspect. The boy has his senses, he wants to please them. Through the girl. The girl has her senses. She wants to please them through the boy. So basically, they kind of work together, Pranamoy, to respect each other, not move too fast, until they've worked out, okay, this one doesn't mind this, that one doesn't mind that, till you find a balanced situation. Then each of them can enjoy the senses. Right? But there's still no sacrifice. Right? There's no sacrifice. I still have my agenda. Instead of doing it this way, I'll do it that way. But the platform of Manamoy, or religious principles, or Varnashram, means sacrifice. For a relationship, I must sacrifice. Right? The husband must sacrifice for the family. He must bring facility, he must protect. Those things are a great burden. It's a sacrifice. But because he does that, there's a taste in that that is not gotten by just following your own agenda. You know? The children must sacrifice. They must behave in certain ways. Parents must sacrifice more. Right? The sacrifice is the greatest on the parents' part. That's why it's a higher rasa. That's why they get more out of it. Right? So, in other words, when we accept the Vedic principles as given by our acharyas and do them because they're duty, not because we're attached to them. That's what Krishna says. He spends the whole Gita basically telling Krishna, do your duty. Right? After telling him he's a fool for talking about doing duties or running away from duties. Because he's saying, doing the duty to please Krishna, that's reality. Doing a duty just for duty, that's no real meaning. So you do your duty because you're supposed to do it. I may like it, I may not like it. The man may not like to get in the car and drive down, you know, an hour into town and then sit in this crazy office all day with all these nonsense people, you know, for 5 days a week so he gets money so he can maintain his house. But he does it because of the relationship. It's his duty. He wants to be a grihastha. He has to somehow or another be able to maintain it. So it's a duty. So we see in the tendency in the modern culture is to give up that sacrifice, give up that duty. So we move farther away from sacrificing for Krishna, where I just do things for myself. So we come closer and closer just to the animal culture. Sophisticated, but we must also appreciate that there are some very sophisticated animals also. Right? Western culture, we're used to dogs and cats. They're not overly sophisticated. But you associate with other animals. You see elephants, parrots, you know, cockatoos. Quite sophisticated. Swans. They're very sophisticated in their movements and their dealings, how they eat. So, you know, becoming, okay, the culture is developing to higher quality animals. But it doesn't matter if you're an Afghan or you're a bull terrier, you're still a dog, right? Like that. That's not the important. So, so this acceptance of the principles of the Vedic culture and doing it because it's duty, I may like it, I may not like it, that makes for sacrifice, that makes for relationship. But now, as Krishna pointed out, that's not enough. It has to be done for Krishna. Then it actually becomes alive. If you want material world to work nicely for you, you have to follow the Vedic culture. Right? And if you want it to actually have a spiritual result, then you have to connect it to Krishna. So Krishna is recommending that. Otherwise, if you just have the culture without the philosophy, it's sentiment. Right? That's the mind, emotion, sentiment, all that. Prabhupada says, if you have religion but no philosophy, it's sentiment. Right? Like you see, many of the followers of the Vedic culture, you know, Indians and that, they follow very nicely. They have faith in it. They're getting their results. They have nice family relationships. Marriages don't break up. Kids turn out very nice. They're economically very, very well established. They have good family relationships, big, huge families like that. And they're all very emotionally satisfied. But it's all sentiment because there's no philosophy behind it. Or, Prabhupada says, if we have philosophy but no religion, means we don't follow the Vedic culture, then we end up with mental speculation. So generally we would think, well, that's the, means the, you know, the sentiment is just the, you know, the karmis, and the philosophy without the culture, that's just the jnani. It's nothing to do with us. But the point is he's making this point. And if we have both, it means the devotee has both. So if we just take the one, we'll end up as sentimentalists. We may have a nice emotional time, but we still won't be satisfied. We joined this movement because materially we can't be satisfied. We want to be devotees. We want to know something more. Same time as if we just take the philosophy without the culture, we become impersonal. So it is the karmas and jnanis. But devotional service can be affected by this. Kapila Muni explains this. Devotional service can be done in the mode of ignorance, in the mode of passion, the mode of goodness. So Krishna is recommending pure goodness. And this is by engaging what one is doing in his service. Right? Because if you do an activity for him, there's no desire. You understand he is the reason that it's happening. He's the doer. Then there's no misunderstanding. There's no ignorance. There's no material desire. There's no passion. So we're doing it out of duty. So that's the mode of goodness. So goodness, what is the definition of goodness without passion or ignorance? It's pure goodness. Though it may be through the mechanical process. That's sadhana. So we establish ourselves on the platform of pure goodness by the mechanics of the sadhana and the culture, by this mentality. And with time, by doing that, by associating with the Lord and the devotees through this platform, we're enlightened, and we become detached from the material energy. Then we find slowly that affection for Krishna natural starts to awaken within the heart by that spiritual association. Then whatever we're doing becomes spiritual. This is the mechanical process of what we're talking about. So when we say all devotional service is spiritual, this is mechanically how it works. And that's what Krishna is telling in the 18th chapter of the Gita. He gives this. You perform your duty without attachment, without thinking you're the doer, you know, which means without false ego, and without desire for results. So right there means do your duty without any passion or ignorance. Right? And then, if you can remember the Lord, then you yourself are situated in pure goodness. At least if not, your activity is. And by associating with the Lord through these activities, then we become purified. So this is what Krishna is recommending. If we have any difficulties on the emotional platform, in other words, the social platform, interaction with others, it basically boils down to we're not following the proper rules for that interaction, nor accepting the mentalities and the purposes for those rules that go with them. It's like a teacher is supposed to teach, right? So the basic principle is, okay, the teacher is the authority and the student is learning. But there's a mentality that goes with that. There must be compassion. Like if you see the picture of Prabhupada when he's teaching Dwarkadish how to write, and Prabhupada's sitting there at the desk and Dwarkadish is sitting next to him, Prabhupada's holding his hand. Prabhupada's total attention is on how Dwarkadish is writing. It's not somewhere else. Total attention is there. So that sacrifice by the teacher for the student must be there. Then we see we get an excellent result. That student gets full attention. They feel satisfied. They're emotionally satisfied. And when they grow up, they'll be able to do the same for the next generation. And if it's not, you have something else you're thinking of. The student will be thinking of something else, and when they grow up, when they teach, they'll be thinking of something else. Their students will think of something else, and each generation will just get worse than the last. But his full attention is there, and that is because of duty. This is how a teacher does. Out of compassion, there must be patience. So many different things. Because when you hold that hand and you move it, it may move with you, may not move with you. So many things. You have to, and it's not you're controlling, you're helping them. So this is the interesting thing. When you understand the culture, you see all the aspects that everybody sits around and argues about, they're all contained in one place. You know, is the teaching authoritative, or is it democratic, or is it liberal? These are the discussions that go on in educational circles. Right? But all of those have to be there at one time, though one may be more prominent than the other. The teacher is the authority. This is how you write the letter. You can't make up your own letter. Right, and A has a particular way it looks. That's it. Some little variation, individuality. But if it's not in a certain way, it's not an A. That authority is there. Then that working with the student is there. And then that liberality. Sometimes the student does this and that. You let it go for a moment and then catch it. So when that all is there, you have a good teacher, you have a good student. And what is the purpose of that? The student has full attention on these things. They learn the foundations by which they can learn higher subjects that they can learn about Krishna. And the teacher has to live the example to do these things. So he actually has to want that this student goes back to Godhead. That's why it says, don't become a mother, a father, a teacher, you know, a king, or a demigod, unless you can take your students or your dependents back to Godhead. So that's the purpose. So when you have that purpose, with following Krishna's rules, and then engaging these senses, all in Krishna's service, you have a complete, you know, spiritual experience and material experience. The spiritual experience is there, because it's done according to Krishna's rules, which are in the material realm. That also gets taken care of. So basically what it means is, if there's any difficulties, we're not following the rule, or even if we're following the rule, because Rupa Goswami says, niyamagraha, means either you're not following the rule, because you don't know why, and it looks stupid, it's not practical, or you're following the rule just because it's a rule, and you don't know the purpose behind it, or the mentality by which that's followed. So either one of them
are useless,
right? Not following the rule means we fall into the platform of mental speculation. We have the philosophy, but I don't accept the rules. I don't accept the religion. So therefore, it becomes mental speculation. Or I accept the rule, but I don't know how to connect it to the philosophy. And therefore, it's just sentiment. So generally, if you look at difficulties that are there in establishing proper relationships and social interaction, it's simple, we fall into one of these two categories. We're either sentimentalists or mental speculators. Very few accept the philosophy, accept the rules, and know how to connect them together. And that is what the Bhagavatam is for. It gives the philosophy, and in the philosophy that it's giving, it gives the story behind it. So you can see practically how it's applied. This person accepted. Kardama Muni accepts the philosophy, whatever I want, I approach the Lord. What did he do? Then he did all these things. He didn't just come for 2 seconds, find the deity, please Krishna, give me a wife. He actually went through the austerity to please Krishna by the process of sadhana. Right? To please the Lord means it has to be done in devotion. Right? He wasn't thinking of the wife all the time. He was thinking of devotional activity. Right? And then at the proper time, then, okay, what is your request? This is my request. I want to be able to serve you through this ashram. I'm not properly situated in this one. So that's the practical application of it. And you see it works very nicely. He was very qualified. He was a first-class brahmachari. His wife was very qualified because she wanted somebody who was qualified. And it made a wonderful match. You don't see any problems in their relationship. Right? When you, because it goes into detail, their whole life. You don't see any problems there. And you see what is necessary. You even see someone say, well, grihastha life, there's nothing explained much. They even get into how to conceive a child. Right? He was very austere, controlled senses. The wife developed good submissiveness, good service attitude, because the son is going to take on the qualities of the mother. Mother is respectful. Mother has a good service attitude. The son has that. Then that makes a good leader. They can be a good devotee, good leader. So the rules are written into the relationship for all these purposes. And we're just doing it as duty. Because ultimately, this is not the platform of reality, material nature. The platform of reality is our spiritual interaction, means that it's service for Krishna, and ultimately that we remember Krishna, go back to Godhead, that it was service. So these things, it's like, that's what Prabhupada always says, it's like a drama. But unless you do your part in the drama, it's not a very good drama. Right? A good drama is when each person plays their part. Then it works very, very nicely. So that's the thing. This then draws out the proper emotional exchange. And with that, naturally, morals are practiced there, and the senses get taken care of. Right? From dharma comes artha. From dharma, following religious principles, comes economic development. From that comes sense gratification. So devotees are wondering how to make the economic development. It's by following dharma. By accepting this, that will come. But we're not doing it for that purpose. That comes automatically. If you eat, you become satisfied. Right? So you follow that, but for Krishna. In other words, we don't apply our attention down from dharma, artha, the kama. We do the dharma for Krishna. And the artha and kama automatically come, but also in connection to Krishna. Then it's very nice. Otherwise, if we just follow it without, then like sentimentalists, we'll get that. So it's a very, very interesting balance here. That one has to understand these codes. Then one understands why a brahmachari must do these things. Right? One must see, what is the mentality? Prabhupada explains in the purports. Many times we'll just say, oh, that's something else. No, that is why it works. We'll take the philosophy, you know, hardcore philosophy, and we'll take hardcore rules. But we have a tendency to leave in between what explains why they work. What is the mentality? What is the actual application? You know, we'll take the rule of the brahmachari, but not the mentality of the brahmachari. Right? Because the brahmachari is detached, therefore he has nothing to deal with. He needs very little. Right? He has no responsibilities. So whatever few things he needs, he keeps. That's it. No, it's not that just because he keeps a few things, he's a brahmachari. It's because he has the mentality, he keeps a few things. Okay? Then, because there's no attachments, and because he's on the bottom of the pile, right? Then he is very gentle with everyone else. He cultivates this mood of submission to the teacher. And so he's very gentle by nature. So he'll deal gently with everybody else. Like you see, Narada and everybody else, when they're dealing very, very gently. And then that is a real brahmachari. Right? But we don't take that part of it. We just take, you know, brahmacharis like this, tough as nails, eats chunks of wood for breakfast, and, you know, like that, and women, we spit on them, and, you know, all this kind of stuff. But we see that those never last as brahmacharis. You know, it's just like, you know, a countdown, you know. Brahmacharini ashram would be going on a bet how long the guy lasts, you know. I say 3 months. No, not that long. You know, like that, because it's just not brahmachari life. It's not the right mentality. That's the thing. So you accept the mentality, you get the application. Just like in the spiritual, that's how it's going on in the spiritual realm. In the spiritual realm, you have an attachment for Krishna. That manifests your body. Yam kama krodha sahaja pranayari bhiti vatsalya moha guru gaurava sevya bhavai. That according to that bhava, that's the service you'll do, you manifest a form. Right? You have a friendship attachment towards Krishna, you manifest a cowherd body, cowherd boy body. You have a parental attachment for Krishna, you manifest an older gopi or an older gopa body. So in the same way as you have a mentality here, you accept all the principles of mentality of the rule, then you actually, it manifests the rule. In other words, from subtle, you get gross. The material world started out from false ego. False ego then went into intelligence, then down like this until you get down to earth. So subtle comes to gross. Thinking, feeling, willing. You think it. Then you feel. You become attached to it. Then you engage the senses and try to get it. So it's always subtle to gross. So what's happened is we've taken the philosophy and we've taken the gross application, but we haven't taken what actually makes the gross application work. So that is abhideya. That is the process of devotional service. That is why we're Rupanugas. Because our emphasis is on that. That process of pleasing Krishna, serving Krishna. So that has a mentality. There's a mentality behind it. There's a ritual. And there's a purpose. Right? So unless these three are understood or in place, you don't get the proper thing. You may have the right mentality. You may know the purpose, but you don't perform the ritual properly. But that's not so bad. There's no ego. He was discussing with Jayadwaita Maharaj. In the beginning, devotees first started, you know, 26 Second Avenue, 61 Second. They didn't know what was going on. But because they understood this is to please Krishna, and they had the right mentality, even though the ritual, the technique wasn't so good, it functioned. Devotees were happy. But if we get the ritual, but with no these others, it won't be happy. And if we throw the whole thing out, then that only leaves us. If you throw out manamoy, or the rituals there, then it only leaves us with pranamoy. And the Vedic literature doesn't have pranamoy without manamoy. It's always connected. You have the main principles, then you have the sub ones, and then the ones below that, and all that. They're all connected in a line. So if you throw out the top principles, then it's very hard to actually put together something. So the tendency is to throw the whole thing out, and then we fall back into our habits. We'll have to take Western paradigms to try to create some social situation. But what we have to do is accept the Vedic, accept the mood behind the activity, the proper manifestation of the activity, and what is the purpose and how it connects to developing love for Krishna. That combination makes it very strong, and that is the wonderful devotee. That association that we join the movement to find, that is it. One who understands, has the mood, proper mood in performing an activity, knows how to properly perform it, or at least is learning that, and is understanding or learning the principles. They understand the servant of Krishna, and they want pure love of God. Then it's a complete package. And anything less than that doesn't work. It's not complete. And this is, Lord Chaitanya says this, that this is, until you understand relationship, process, and goal or result, you don't actually know Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy. And then in this process, then we have to know these parts. What is the ritual? What is the purpose of that ritual? What's the mentality behind performing that ritual? Then when I say ritual, I mean any activity. It means how you take prasad, or how you run your household, or how you deal with others. It doesn't just mean a religious ceremony, meaning in the temple. Because the idea in the Vedic culture is everything you're doing is a religious ceremony. You know, taking care of your child in the house is part of the religious ceremonies. That's why the Vedic culture is so special. Is that God's not just in the temple. God's whatever in every activity that you do, as long as you see the connection. So it's very, very special. How you dress, how you behave, how you talk, how you interact with others. Krishna's entered it through all these things. So if we, instead of rejecting following the Niyamagraha in one way, or doing it fanatically, we have to understand why. Then it becomes gentle and very, very nice, very tasty. We have 5 minutes. Is there any question? Yes.
I often wonder about the devotees who are deeply emotionally disturbed from childhood, let's say, or people who get really heavily screwed up in this kind of fortune. They do chant, they follow the principles, they do have some kind of devotion which keeps them in. But sometimes it seems that this devotion is rather a function of the disturbance than something deep from the heart. Of course, I may not know. I often wonder, is there some mercy for them if they cannot get this emotional suffering together? They just cannot. But they do chant for their whole life. What will happen to them?
It definitely, because anything done for Krishna, Krishna accepts. Because see, Krishna is also very liberal. It's just like an adult. When there's a very nice, gentle child, and they're trying to do an activity, though they don't do it nicely, the adults all accept it. Because of the sincere endeavor. Like that. That is a very important element. Rupa Goswami bases a lot of our fundamental principles on this point. You know, of that the desire to come to the perfectional platform is accepted by the Lord and the Eternal Associates as practically the same as being on that platform. So, as long as we're endeavoring, even though there's so many, that's why the process is so perfect. So that even now, even though we may come from all funny backgrounds and everything can't work and we have so many disturbances, yeah, we have difficulty in relationships, still we can advance as long as that's our determination. The point is sometimes due to the emotional disturbance, we will start to have doubts in the Krishna conscious process, and we'll think something else is going to satisfy us. So that's actually the weakness. So it's a matter of, no, the any satisfaction we want can only be got there. Because these things of emotional platform, this religious principles, has to be based on the mode of goodness. Krishna spends, you know, the 17th and 18th chapter of the Gita explaining how to determine between an activity in goodness, passion, or ignorance. And he recommends doing those activities in goodness, means that mentality of goodness. And with at least aspiration for these higher principles of doing without attachment, with all that. So we know that's what we want. Then if you do the activities, these things will manifest. So because it's the mode of goodness, in the beginning it may not be so tasty. You know? So it's not like we don't get the same rush out of, let's say, you know, you know, where we just get together and, you know, and talk and get everyone fired up, and then we go out and do it. Because that will be there in the beginning, but as we walk out of the door and all that's finished, it kind of starts to wane. You know? So, but the point is that we get together, understand, and with that understanding we try to apply. And then with that application, slowly, slowly, bit by bit, it becomes more and more concrete, more and more, we get more out of it. So we find then the relationships, everything is start to get into place. But it's in the beginning it's done because we intellectually accept it. Like that. So that's the first platform. Just intellectually accept that this is the process, it works. The example is given in the Bhagavatam, and these examples are for us. They're not something just theoretical for 5,000 years ago. They apply today. You know? It's just like Kardama you, the Kardama and Devahuti, because they had a planned, you know, they were into planning having a child, they got a good result. So that'll work 5,000 years ago. Well, actually, that was more than 5,000 years ago. That would have been like 150 trillion years ago. So, but that will work today. And if you follow the example of Diti and Kasyapa, who didn't plan, just Diti decided, I want a kid. And Kasyapa, you know, couldn't tell her no. So then they had a kid. So then that's what, then they got a bad result. So one got the Supreme Lord and one got a demon. And those principles apply today. So if we intellectually accept that, then it works. We will get the result because it's connected to Krishna, as we mentioned before. Is that because it's being done for Krishna, it's connected.
Okay? Does the devotee's sangha gradually begin to improve at one point? Or can it go on for many years without external signs of improvement, or there is something going on inside?
No. It can be. Okay. The watch just made noise. We'll have to stop here. Sorry if we bored anyone unnecessarily. Srila Prabhupada ki.